Can I latch on to just a tiny little bit of what you said? And this is how our realization of time can relate to some classical time, which might be absolute. And this goes back to the question of the issue of the arrow of time in cosmology. So let's consider a universe which is now not expanding forever, but which is actually oscillating. It's a possibility that our universe is oscillating, that our universe is, lives forever, and that we just happen to be in an expanding cycle.
So right, just for clarity, you mean last night it expands, then collapses, then expands, then collapses,
right.
Bounces, expands,
right.
Collapses. Okay.
So I'd like to draw something on the board. So I have this absolute timeline, which has absolutely nothing to do with any physical observations. And what I'd like to draw here, first of all, is on this axis, is first the size of space. This is one cycle. And then I'd like to draw a second curve, and this curve is sort of a local causal radius. It's called in cosmology the Hubble radius, which is not the horizon, it's just the inverse expansion rate. So what the inverse expansion rate does is it is, let's say, decreasing and then increasing again. So then I would like to draw scales that we could, on which objects are. These I'll draw as straight lines.
What
large scale, middle scale, medium scale, small scale. So this is spatial direction. So what happens now is that as time goes on in this cycle, we lose information about some of the system. What happens
why do we lose it?
Because we cannot access it with causal physics. Everything which is larger than this orange line is things that we cannot access with local devices that obey special activity.
Mm-hmm.
So we seem to see the entropy increasing. Entropy increasing, that means us aging. So,
help
and then things, then things go back.
Can you help me with that for a second? I have thought that if you've lost information, that entropy would have decreased.
No.
Why am I backwards?
It's the perfect system, perfect information means zero entropy.
Yeah.
Perfect knowledge of the system. As we lose information about certain scales, our ignorance is increasing, the entropy is increasing.
Okay, I'm with you.
So this could be the way that in the context of a system with some absolute classical time, that there's some relation between what you were talking about.
But does, before we go to the kinetic premises, does anybody want to, do you have something new or are you applying to?
I want to comment on what Robert just said.
Oh, good, okay. Go ahead.
I have something new. Is that what you want?
No, you have something new.
I do, and I wasn't going to come.
Okay, so before, does anybody have a... I want to bracket some... We keep bracketing things to come back to, but the issue of thermodynamic time, of entropy, of decay of information, which is directly related to what you talked about, we have to come back to. So if we're not going to engage it now, let's make it a topic to come back to. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I'm reminded from Roberto's comments of Goethe in response to Newton. And I think it faces a similar problem. And I suspect, Roberto, you're not impressed with what Robert has said. And the reason you're not impressed is because it does not, I think, in your terms, incorporate your theses. And my worry on Goethe's problem is... The terms of physics are dictated mostly by mathematical imaginations. and not by other forms of imaginative thought. Now, quite why that is an interesting question. But if it is so, and if it is further so that the mathematical forms of thought are what I think, Roberto, in your terms would be Platonic ideals, then there is a problem already at the level of the use of mathematics and physics in characterizing the notion of time in your own terms. I don't know what to offer you by way of solace. It does seem to me that this is what has driven the Platonizing, as it were, of our worldview, and it seems to me that mathematics has driven physics. I'm not sure if there's a way out of this.
Could we hear something on the timelessness bias in mathematics? Because that's part of the implication of what you say, that the bias against the radical character of time is is the poison gift of mathematics to physics.
Yes.
Could we hear something on that?
Absolutely. Because, I'll try and other people may want to try. Because your first two rules, let me just take your first two.
They're not rules, they were theses.
Theses, thank you. Time is a contrast between what changes and what doesn't change, and everything changes sooner or later. So what this implies, I would love to be able to invent a theory of nature that realizes these, partly for the reasons that we very badly express. What it implies is a merging, or at least the breaking down of the distinction between the configuration of the system at one moment, which changes, and the laws or the rules which guide that change. And clearly, in biology, that's happened a long time ago. And of course, there's the cop-out that, well, what's really happening is molecules and atoms obeying the laws of physics. But I don't think that that's a decisive objection. I think this is really the core, absolutely the core of the issue and of the question. Could there be whether a kind of, you know, information system or something like an algorithmic system, but not a Turing machine, or could there be a mode of description of a physical system or the universe in which there's not an easy distinction between what are, quote, the configurations and what are, quote, the rules by which the configurations change, or by which that configuration is a question of degree, of scale, of circumstance, in any way contingent. I don't know any logical reason why there couldn't be such a thing, but I think that scientists hit the nail, you know, on the head. It's very hard to think of one. And why it's hard to think of one is because of that way of thinking about mathematics.
But Simon is suggesting it's not just because of the way of thinking about mathematics, it's because of mathematics.
Yes.
So, yeah. Which is it?
Well, we may come down to a disagreement about this, because there are... Well, 14. I'd rather reserve finishing my sentence. If you were responding to that, go ahead.
I'm commenting on something you said, but I think you should finish your sentence.
Okay, there are philosophies of mathematics, which are, for example, intuitionalism, in which are non-Platonic, and which suggest or invite you to think about mathematics as time-bound and as something which takes place within time, which might or might not offer avenues of escape from Simon's trap, the trap that Simon pointed out. Okay, I finished my sentence.
May
I come back a moment on this? It seems to me that intuitionism, as indeed a Kantian philosophy of mathematics, certainly defends the temple from the charge of, I don't know, parochialism, of inappropriate exporting of subjective features of our experience to a subject matter to which it is foreign. But I don't know that it works very well or any better than Platonism in giving a conception of structure, of mathematical structure, which is temporal. So I see the serpent, as it were, its tongue is two forked. It's a forked tongue. One fragment of it is that the notion of mathematical object can be resisted, but you end up with mathematical thought, which is temporal, yes, but not yet the thought of anything which is temporal. Let me try to... What I think would satisfy some of Roberta's desires here would be a mode of thought of the real, of the physical, which incorporates these elements. But that mode of thought, if it's to look anything like physics, is going to be descriptive. Now, perhaps actually this would be a point where one would object and deny that one is ending up with a description. But if it is to be descriptive, it seems it will have to be a structure. And no matter if the mode of apprehension of the structure is temporal, the structure itself will not seem to have that characteristic. Or if it does, it's in the way that Robert just indicated it could, which is actually rather familiar to us in physics, but I think clearly does not satisfy Roberta.
So, this thing about time being the contrast between what changes and what doesn't, first it sounds appealing, but on second thoughts it seems, at least literally, it contradicts at least relativity. I mean, you do need to have something that doesn't change. So what would be the absolute structure that you have?
Could I interject? You need to have something that doesn't change forever, or just not something that doesn't change for a while?
Right, so then do you mean approximately then?
No, what I mean, combining the first and the second thesis is time is the contrast in experience and in fact between what changes and what doesn't change. But now the first thesis is qualified by the second, because what doesn't change changes also sooner or later, and then that change is relative to something else that doesn't change. So it's
but at the end you have something that does not change.
In the end, there's nothing in the world that is the fixed lever that remains forever invariant. But there is still, at any moment in time, time being real, a contrast between what changes and what doesn't change.
So that's interesting, because the way you're putting it, Roberto, says that, I mean, I have fooled around for 40 years with synchronous Boolean networks, in which there's a little clock that ticks and things update. And there's only one time scale in my little model world. And what you have demanded is a high dispersion of time scales for us to experience time, for there to be time. It's a funny circular argument, too, because you're appealing to time scales in defining time. It's hidden in your words, right?
Let's try to contrast this with a similar notion that we tend to use, which is you want things to change relative to everything else.
You want?
You would like things to change relative to everything else, or you would like the relationships to change of a part with respect to the rest.
So I'm not sure now. Let me, just for clarification, return to the contrast with to society. So there's always a contrast between a moves, actions we take within a framework of institutional arrangements and ideological assumptions in society, the formative context of a type of social life, and the moves by which we change pieces of this framework. So, and when we change pieces of the framework, we don't change all of it at the same time. We change just a part of it. So actually the idea that fascinated classical leftist thought of systemic substitution is really just a fantasy. It's a limiting case, because the standard mode of transformation is revolutionary reform, the piecemeal substitution of some piece of this framework. And that's what you require to have the experience of historical time, this contrast between something being taken as given and something being challenged and changed. So my first thesis is exporting that idea to the whole of the universe. And I'm surprised by the notion that it somehow contradicts the standard physical thinking. Does the standard physical thinking now require some absolute time or some...
No, I mean, in a way what you're saying sounds identical to what we would like to do, mm-hmm. which is if you could start with some network or whatever you prefer and find a background. Mm-hmm. And then you would describe evolution of things with respect to that background. But our experience is that this is very hard to do. And I think it relates, I'm not exactly sure how to say it, but it relates to what Stu just said, that in the case of the society, you do have a time with respect to do things. If you now want to talk about things like space-time itself, can you really do this unambiguously, having the thing that doesn't change and the things that does with respect to that? I mean, you want something to be steady for a long time, but you don't want to do that referring to an external time.
Does anything in the notion of time that is now deployed by physics as it now exists require that there be a part of the structure that never changes? Is any part, does any part, you yourself use the word background.
Yes.
Is it required that any part of the background never change? Or is all you require that there be a contrast between what at a given time changes and doesn't change?
So I'm not quite sure how to answer this. I'm a bit confused, but in general, the notion of a background is not fundamental. So you would, all the structures are dynamical, including the background,
yes.
right?
Yes.
So it's quite the opposite. That should change too.
But not all at the same time.
Not all at the same time.
Yes, that's all. That's all I require for the first thesis.
Just going by hands, Jaron.
Yeah, I'm very sympathetic to your notion of a mixture of change and stasis defining time, and I to my ears it's extremely compatible with the thing I've been talking about with similarity and repeated cycles. And I don't know if it sounds that way to you. So in principle, I'm extremely sympathetic to it. I'm not sympathetic to your allergy to math, though, and I wanted to say something about it.
I'm suggesting he has
Simon warned me that I had an enemy in mathematics.
Well,
and
I asked you
was
it poison or something?
I didn't say it was a poison gift. I asked, is it a poison gift?
Let me suggest why it isn't, to me at least. And the reason is that it's so strange. And its strangeness is of such an extremity that it almost creates its own kind of time in itself. So let me explain what I mean. If you if you choose whatever starting point you might want to for math, and there are many ones, but as it happens, maybe counting is the most intuitive one for us, and then you just explore the implications of counting, gradually math becomes weirder and weirder and weirder, and it deterministically becomes weirder and weirder. If you just part the integers and look inside, you start seeing very, very, very strange structures of just absolutely transcendent weirdness. And the interesting thing about them is it takes a great deal of inevitable and irreducible work to get to the point of seeing them. So the weirdness of math almost creates its own sense of time. And you know, if the only purpose of, if the only thing some universe was to do was to reveal the ever-expanding weirdness of time, maybe math is about to stop getting weirder at the next go-round, but I mean, just in my short lifetime, math has gotten so much more profoundly weirder than I ever could have imagined it being when I was young. So what I want to point out is, whatever math is exactly, it's got a quality to it that has this sort of, the term I like for myself is a weird one, is cornucopic, but it's, or cornucopic, lately, it's like the math in itself, as it's unveiled, has this quality, strangely enough, and it seems an inevitable quality, of revealing with each new layer this kind of, we can think of it as having been eternally there or not, but either way, it can't be anything other than it is. It certainly is deterministic. But each new layer is revealed, really looks like this kind of innovation, as you call it, or this kind of intense creativity. It's as if it's built into thought itself. And having observed that, and as I say, this is an empirical observation, not a theoretical. This is an empirical one. So at any moment, math could get dull. I mean, that's a possibility. But if the empirical observation predicts the future in this case, then to me, there's a sort of an intuitive sense to it. It happens that something about that the structure of thought itself leads to creativity. And I find that, you know, now I'm speaking in a completely different way than I have earlier today. But
you haven't answered directly Simon's warning of danger lurking, which is you haven't said whether in becoming more interesting, mathematics also becomes more time-friendly.
No, I'm saying mathematics becomes an alternate source of where the idea of time comes from in its revelation. In other words, the weirdness of math being so hard to get at and so... fecund is yet another way to think about what time is. I'm saying something a little weird, so you just adjust your weirdness filter to open it up. But
may I just give a little historical background to my earlier comment and the comparison with Goethe in particular? It was a great.
And could you restate the quote by Goethe? Because
it wasn't a quote, but Goethe found in modern physics a direction, a tendency, repugnant to his conception of the real and the true and so forth, and it took particular expression in his theory of colour. And for Goethe, the geometrization of colour, the reduction of colour to wavelengths of light, to mechanical properties of corpuscles in motion, was inadequate to the subject matter, that the colour, the experience of colour, demanded more. And he saw in this failure of Newtonian physics a mistake in the entire direction of physics. And maybe mistakenly, I hear in Roberto a similar appeal to some felt, tangible, palpable characteristics of time, of the temporal, which is lost in the Platonizing changeless conceptions in accordance with abstraction. Now, I may be wrong, but this was my sense, and it doesn't come up so much in 1 and 2, or indeed in 3. It comes with 4. But I also sense that 4 is rather important to Roberto.
But tell me this once again. So there is this widespread belief that that not just from Newton's time, but from at least Galileo's time, quantification is associated somehow with the assassination of time.
Yes.
But now, is it not the case that the calculus was in part invented to represent mathematically transformation in time?
Yes.
Yes. And Newton himself, in part, defined time and temporal change in terms of flux, in terms of flow. These were qualitative characteristics that he used to, as it were, define what the differentiation actually meant and so forth. Mm-hmm. And Kant followed him in this.
Mm-hmm.
But Kant also held that this was the ground of mathematical truth, clarity, and indeed proof. Yeah. And that was thoroughly discredited.
Yes, but following up on that, if it is true that the calculus was invented to represent some aspect of transformation in time mathematically, cannot there be further mathematical discoveries or inventions that would accommodate more of the experience of temporality?
It's possible. It's possible. It has not been the historical trend, I think is the short answer. And I think that the broader worry is that most progress in physics has come about through abstracting away from the felt qualitative character of experience.
Of course.
And I think this is also at work in all thinking about dynamics and time. Successful physics, theorizing in dynamics, has not kept close to the felt phenomenology of time. It has rather departed from it. I don't know if it has to be so, but it seems that is the trend.
I think this is a crucial point. Let me by way of moving towards a convergence to today. Say something equally in Jaron's direction and equally I don't know, crazy is not the right word. In Jaron's direction.
Okay. It'll work.
If something like what Roberto is talking about is possible, it does seem it requires either a new mathematics or a new view of mathematics. I apologize, I missed some of the interchange, but I think that what I feel, and here I apologize because I have not, this is not something that I've thought through to coherent conclusions, but I feel a lot of sympathy with what Jaron is saying, and what I feel is that the timeless bias in mathematics may be transcendable, and it may be possible to have much the same mathematics within a way of thinking about it in which time will seem, and a creative Bergsonian sort of time will seem as inevitable as the timeless bias now seems to us. And I know that's totally unsupported. Okay. And my feeling about that lies, and we were mentioning this a little bit before, but just between us, so let me, my feeling before lies partly in the issue of the interpretation of Gödel's theorem, even more in the interpretation of Turing's results, in the interpretation of results of Chaitlin, I think, from...
Mm-hmm. What of Turing?
The idea that there are non-computable numbers, A, okay, and then B, that almost every number is non-computable.
Oh, just the weirdness of the number line.
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
Yes. Listen. Yeah. Okay. You can view that in two ways. You can say that, and I think it's probably sufficient here just to talk about the numbers. You don't have to have many other structures in mathematics. You can either view it as there is this platonic reality called the real number line, defined by some set of axioms which exists, and it happens to be true that almost every number in that system is unspeakable by us, is unnameable, has properties that cannot be proven. That's what Gödel and Turing prove. Not just some, but almost every number is undescribable by a finite set of axioms. Okay? And you can believe that our ability to say what I just said is indicative of a platonic timeless realm that we have access to some truths about, like the one that I just stated, Or you can take the point of view, okay, that you can take one of two other points of view. One, the intuitionist point of view, that there's something really illegitimate about that part of mathematics, so let's just forget about it. Or you can take the point of view, which I read you, I've never heard you use the term before, but this cornucopia idea, that okay, anything that mathematics is something which has a notion of a causal order and an incompleteness built into it, and at any point a certain amount has been revealed either by the evolution of nature or by human thought, but infinitely more remains to be developed and revealed, again, either by human thought or by nature itself. Human thought, of course, just being a part of nature, well, that's particularly adapted, revealing properties of the numbers. And I know, Simon, I know that there's a that there's not, these are not views which are much supported in contemporary philosophy of mathematics. At least I've looked for them and haven't found help in them. Okay. But Lou Kaufman, who's an important topologist, tries to express something like this. And the way that he tries to express it is that whenever you have, and maybe help me here, whenever you have a situation in which you appear to run into a paradox in mathematics, whether it's Russell's paradox, for example, you run it one way, you come to one conclusion, you run it the other way, you come to the other conclusion, mm-hmm. that you can imagine that there's some timeless realm about which you've just hit some measure of our indeterminacy about. Or you can imagine that what's happening is like an alternating circuit. That is, you go this way, you go here, then you go back this way, you go there, and that this is something which cannot be said without being said in time, because different things are true alternatively.
Mm-hmm.
And that therefore the existence of potential paradox in mathematics demands time even to explore that part of mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of where the intuition is. And
yeah, it's absolutely, it's very compatible.
I'd just like to hear one further word from Simon on what you think, Simon, is the relation between the recalcitrance to time and the recalcitrance to the qualitative, because they're not the same thing. One could. It seemed to me that the second is a much more obviously intrinsic feature of mathematical physics than the first.
My suspicion is that the appeal that you are making is an appeal to the qualitative in the realm of the temporal. And that is the first link that I see. Otherwise, I see no problem in reconstructing our phenomenology of time in a very elaborate, complex structural form. But I know this is not sufficient for you, and this is why I suspect you are seeking something more immediate and more direct. But look, may I put a simple question to lead to you, Roberta, to others here, if there is the thought here that mathematics is really fundamentally congenial or accommodates temporal notions, do mathematical facts change?
Why not? How? And maybe why? But this is this. I forget what it's called. The much more called the intuition strategy. Why could it be that mathematical facts, once either true or false, remain true or false, but that the system,
right.
Okay, but that they can change from becoming indeterminate to decided either true or false. Well, why not? So that there's a stability?
I'm not sure if it does satisfy, what number is it?
two. I'm not sure if that's good enough.
The wrong
time. I think, can I comment on that?
Yeah.
I think in the case of math, if any mathematical fact can be variable, then it's multivariable, and it's something that it could be in some sort of indeterminate or overdetermined state, or because of contradictions. But I don't imagine it could be fixed. But it's a perfectly good natural science idea. I mean, so far I use this just as a joke with my students, and the way I put it is there's this goddess of reality, and she, whenever a scientist asks the first question about natural science the first time, she decides how the experiment will come out, and then thereafter it's set. And then if you get her on a day when she's in a good mood, it comes out in a certain way for you and otherwise not. And that's a perfectly consistent model of the natural world. It works, and you can have science if it should be that way. I don't think it's a fun way to think. I don't think it gives you anything practical. I don't think it works for math, though.
I mean, if you look at a mathematical proposition, anything you might prove, what you do is you write, you have some set of axioms, proceed, and you might do this on paper or in your head. But let's say you do this on paper. So you follow some set of rules, and eventually you get your conclusion, there's your mathematical fact. And it's a physical process. Okay, you know, you think you have a good control over the physics of what's going on here. You think that if you write down a zero, that will remain a zero when you look back at it. You make certain physical assumptions. If your physical theory changes, then the status of that thing you call a fact might change also. So there's a sense in which mathematical facts are bound up with the physics of the way you actually go about verifying them, which is a dangerous line of thought.
Well, I mean, look, the first point to make was, let us not confuse mathematical facts with inscriptions of mathematical facts, but I look, I'm more sympathetic to this view than that. Let's be intuitionists for a moment, and let it be that mathematical truths are those that are known or constructible in the human mind. And if the nature of the human mind changes, presumably the mathematical truths may change too. That would be, I think, a rather thick sense, rich sense, in which mathematical truths may change in time. But is anybody of such a persuasion?
I mean, there's more, in the case of a quantum computer, you can imagine things you could prove to be true using a quantum computer, but actually, for one reason or another, at least because you don't have enough time, you can never prove it to be true using, a classical computer or some classical form of mathematical proof. So you'd have a statement which is true, contingent on quantum theory being true, because the quantum computer only would only work in that case. You can imagine weird ways in which physics and mathematics get completely bound up with each other.
Right. I mean, we could say the same with classical computing music.
Probably, yeah, I'm sure you can find such a thing. Yeah. So,
but if you go back to the example of geometry that we briefly touched on, can you not take the non-Euclidean geometries or geometries in general as quasi-empirical conjectures? And say that that if the world changes, their applicability to the world may change as well.
Sure. That seems to me a non-problematic sense in which, but it doesn't seem to me to be equivalent to the claim that mathematical truths change. And this is reverting to the apparently atemporal character.
But here would be a way of addressing that without opening up all the disputes of the philosophy of mathematics. Just for the simplified purposes of this discussion, you could say mathematical propositions are either quasi-empirical conjectures about the world, in which case it can change in the sense we just discussed, or they are expressions of the reasoning faculties of the human mind, not directly related to the world, in which case they can change only to the extent that the human mind changes. But the sense that's more relevant to this discussion is the first of those two senses.
Isn't it? I don't see it. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that the problem posed by mathematics to, and you haven't corrected me here, so you know, maybe I'm right in my imputation to you of the view that time needs to be represented
in a way that does greater justice to the felt phenomenology of our temporal experience. Any such representation seems to me, as in the case of color, as in the case of many other sensory modes of thought,
yes,
to be somewhat alien to mathematical modes of thought.
Yes. And you could generalize that into a comment about logic also, right? That any and formal relations of consistency and contradiction of entailment seem to be, by their very nature, atemporal. And our causal thinking is temporal, and so there is a discontinuity, even apart from this discussion we've been having here this afternoon, between thinking in formal logical mathematical terms and thinking in causal terms.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
But we didn't produce that by any proposition here. That's just a characteristic of the situation of the human mind. And then it becomes problematic because in marrying mathematics, physics then seems to take into itself this this bias against time of,
yes,
of mathematics.
Yes. Yes, and there have been philosophers who see in the role of the increasing role of logic in philosophy, the death of philosophy, a very famous comment. So a similar felt alienation from the world that we try to reach.
Mm-hmm. But would a partial solution to that be to strengthen the role of physical intuition in the development of physical theories while repeating the feat of the invention of the calculus, as we discussed before, so that the internal agenda of the formalization is not in the driving seat, but as in Newton's case, there are these physical intuitions that then go in search of the mathematics that they need. And that is to the extent that there's a solution in the history of mathematical physics, that's the solution. Now, I'm not convinced by what you've said that we can't have successive doses of that solution. It's worked before, why shouldn't it work again?
But that's how I thought it was going to work, it's just hard.
No.
That's the only solution.
Are we out of time, or are we?
I'm not sure if we're beyond the time, but I think we're having a good time.
Can I just want to make one comment.
There's a famous Canadian song that says we're here for a good time and not for a long time.
No.
So.